In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to hour number two of the program for Friday, October 8th, 2010 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown for this week, and my guests counting down the most important federal news stories of the week as they have selected them are Ed O'Keefe, the Federal Eye of the Washington Post. Nice to see you again,
good
sir.
Good to see you.
You had a good summer, I take it?
Very good summer, yes.
I saw from your Facebook page that you were traveling a lot this summer, weddings,
yes,
and stuff like that. So glad you're back and getting back into the routine. And my other expert on the panel this week is Bob Otto, Executive Vice President of Advisory Services at Agilex and the former Chief Information Officer and CTO at the Postal Service. Bob, nice to see you again.
Great being back.
And you also had some traveling this summer and so on?
Yeah.
Good.
And enjoyed the summer.
Good, good. Nice to see you again. And I am not surprised that you've got some IT-oriented stories in the countdown this week. And we will start with...
Number three!
Bob Otto's third most important federal news story of the week is kind of, this is back to the future story, isn't it?
Yeah, actually it is.
VA considers dumb computers to save money, tighten security. This is the NextGov story about thin clients at the Department of Veterans Affairs. This and the gist of it essentially is same kind of technology that was used in the mainframe days is coming back now in the age of cloud computing and the server consolidation.
Absolutely. In fact, I think that this is probably a story that a lot of the CIOs overlook, and they really ought to pay attention to it because not only does it save money, but it improves the security and lessens the support costs in the future. But what's really neat about this is if you think about your handheld device, it actually is a thin client for mobility workers. And when you're in a hospital and you're dealing with multiple users of the same terminal and you have healthcare information, you really want to protect against healthcare information getting in the wrong hands. So what the Veterans Administration is doing here is basically architecting a solution that's a low-cost solution, and it saves about 30 to 50% over a normal personal computer, yet it satisfies the need. And if you think about today ordering pay-per-view or type of service with cloud computing and some type of over-the-wire service, software as a service, well, this is a perfect solution for this. And a lot of CIOs don't look at this as a solution for their organization because it's not glamorous. It's not the latest state of the art in what they think. But this really is something that Roger Baker is really doing right at VA.
The other agencies there are other agencies that are exploring thin clients. But the broader element of this story, I think, is exactly what you're saying. About Roger Baker, trying a lot of things, staying not on purpose, but staying in the headlines as far as trying innovative things and looking for solutions to issues wherever he can find them. I had Ed Maher on the show yesterday talking about the Vista system and how the Vista, one of the recommendations that IAC made was that Vista go to open source. The VA go to open source for that program. Well, Roger had testified right before Ed at this hearing on Wednesday and stole his thunder by saying, we're going to go to open source. So he's looking at these kinds of things and taking ideas wherever he can get them, which is making me wonder how long he'll be at VA and whether he might move to another job in government at some point.
You know, I had talked to Roger several times and His organization at VA was very much like the Postal Service when I was at the Postal Service, and it's huge, and there's a lot of users, and it's very complex. And he's taking it one step at a time and fixing pieces, and he's making sure that all the pieces and parts are right rather than just doing this, directing stuff, and then moving on. So he's going to be very successful, and I think he's going to be there for a while.
All right. Well, I'll make you a bet on that when we get off the air. Bob Otto's story number three is from NextGov this week, and it's headlined, VA considers dumb computers to save money and tighten security. And, Ed, you're snickering about that, and I want to be very clear. It's not because I think Roger's doing a bad job. I think he's doing such a good job, but I think he's going to be moving up, as they say, in the organization. We'll talk about that later.
I'm snickering that you're not going to make the bet on air. That's why I'm snickering.
This is supposed to be a journalistic enterprise. I'm not supposed to be gambling on the air. Ed O'Keefe, your story number three in the countdown is from the L.A. Times, and it is headlined, Shirley Sherrod Dismissal, A Rash Decision. This is the woman who appeared in a video that was released online. It looked like she was saying that she discriminated against a white farmer. She's African-American. And it turns out that that was not the case at all. And in fact, the farmer came out later and said, wait a minute, this lady helped us and essentially saved our farm. But that was after she had already been fired from the USDA. Now we're seeing a follow-up on this as you chose the story from the Times.
Yeah, the LA Times, the Tribune, Washington Bureau did a fantastic job getting their hands on hundreds of emails that were sent in the hours when this occurred back in, what was it, June?
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of a real fascinating look at how officials overreacted and probably didn't think much beyond the news cycle in this case. I think you had a great example here of people just not counting to 10 and really trying to figure out what happened. And you see it even in the email that Ms. Sherrod sent herself to them saying, you know, I'm disappointed that the secretary and the president let a misrepresentation of my words on the part of a Tea Party be the reason they asked me to resign.
Mm-hmm.
Please look at the tape and see that I used the story from 1986 to show people that the issue is not about race. And then, of course, she resigned in that email. But she was asking them to look at that context. They wouldn't do it. And what's also interesting is this confirms what a lot of us thought at the time, and that is that the White House was keeping at least half an eye on this, and some officials over there said, good for you guys for getting rid of this
way
quickly
to go.
And,
yeah,
you know, getting it out of the way, and nobody will pay attention to it.
Well, right.
It caused 2 months of embarrassment for not only the Agriculture Department, but the administration overall.
Well, and now with this trail that was left behind, here it is again being dredged up in one of the largest newspapers in the United States. So.
Yeah, and then we ran versions of it as well in the Post, so it, you know, it was certainly seen around here. I just think, you know, it's a good example of how this administration, as much as it tries, is still stumbling in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
There's some basic management decisions that get made that may or may not work that we don't necessarily hear about. But here's one that really blew up in their face and I think was an example of D.C. officials not really stepping back and thinking about it before they made a brash move.
Yeah, one of the most important elements of crisis communication, experts in that area tell me, is exactly what you said. Count to 10.
Yep.
Take a deep breath and figure out the situation that you're in before you just knee-jerk and make a mistake that winds up blowing up even worse than where you are right now. What are your sources or the people that you talk to telling you about how this fits with the overall picture?
I did call some people last night when this broke and at USDA, and they made it clear, as they had made it clear after it happened and after she announced she wasn't leaving. They said, look, this was a learning exercise for us. We know we made mistakes. Vilsack knows he made mistakes. We're very sorry about this. It's not going to happen again. You know, everything short of, you know, mea culpa, egg on the face, whatever you want to say, they know it.
The thing about this that I thought was interesting is it's not as clear cut as some of these. I think I can step back, get myself in the shoes of some USDA people at the time and say, wait a minute, this really does look bad. I can also see the point of the people who are saying you have to let this play out for at least a couple hours, do a little bit of shoe leather work and find out what's happening.
And one of the biggest takeaways from it that Vilsack made clear when he came out and with Sherrod and said he was going to review all this is he said one of the biggest problems here was I was in Ohio, my chief of staff was somewhere else, nobody was back in Washington running the ship. And we need to do a better job of coordinating our travel schedules and just making sure that when things like this come up, we take the time to talk about it, we make sure everyone's on the phone together, wires don't get crossed, and we do a better job of making sure that someone's in Washington running things. As much as we like to talk about the ability to work remotely or that, you know, like the president can take everything with him on the road, sometimes you really do have to be in the room together making decisions, and this was an example of that.
Ed O'Keefe, story number three on the Federal News Countdown this week's from the L.A. Times. The headline is Shirley Sherrod Dismissal, A Rash Decision. You can read all about it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. All of our stories on the Federal News Countdown are posted there as selected by Ed O'Keefe of the Washington Post and Bob Otto of AgileX. Story number two from Bob and Ed when we come back to the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Join Jim Fleisig Wednesday, October 19th at noon for his monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. A panel will focus on identity management efforts in the federal government. The panel includes government leaders from DHS, OSD, and GSA. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum, Wednesday, October 19th, 12 noon, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and online at federalnewsradio.com. Sponsored by HP, SafeNet, and UMUC.
What if I said you had the power to speak Chinese or to dream in French? What if you could even read in Italian? You'd be skeptical, right? What if I could prove it to you with a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone? One that unlocks your ability to learn any language on Earth. Introducing the all-new, more powerful Rosetta Stone, the only language learning program that literally awakens your natural ability. And for the first time ever, they're inviting you to experience their groundbreaking program, absolutely free, with a free demo CD-ROM. Call 1-800-600-6621 and request yours. Developed around the way you naturally think and learn, Rosetta Stone teaches you your new language with the tools you already have. And now you can experience it for free. Awaken your natural language learning ability today with a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone. Call 1-800-600-6621 and request yours. Rosetta Stone, your natural ability awakened. That's 1-800-600-6621.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. Big changes at the Defense Department's IT organization. Dave Winogrand, he's been serving as the Deputy DOD CIO. Just got a new job. He's going to tell us about it. And we'll wrap up our series, The Greening of Government. We're going to give you an audio tour of GSA's new carbon footprint tool. It lets you calculate your greenness. That's coming up this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. This week, the stories selected by Ed O'Keefe of the Washington Post and Bob Otto of Agilex, former CIO and CTO at the Postal Service. And we're on
number two.
Second most important federal news story of the week, as chosen by Bob Otto, is a government computer news story, which is headlined, How to Save Energy and Money Through Data Center Consolidation. It's by Rutrell Yassin, and I thought when I saw the headline that it was by Bob Otto. I was surprised it was actually written by somebody else, because this is similar to things that you've written, and these points are things that you actually did when you were at the Postal Service that made a big difference in the way that the agency runs.
Absolutely. In fact, when I was at the Postal Service, we had 20 data centers, and we consolidated them to two, and I actually made the mistake of consolidating from 20 to 11, then realized I didn't need 11, and then I consolidated from 11 to 3 and realized I didn't need 3, and then consolidated to 2. And in each one of those journeys, I wasn't given millions of dollars. I was basically bootstrapping every change and every consolidation. So, you know, there's some real messages in this, because we tried this effort across the government in 1995, if any of you remember. And this was an unfunded mandate as well in 95. And right now there's, you know, the lack of funding with this, and there's a bunch of technical obstacles and some unrealistic deadlines. People think that this is, or are trying to portray this as a 3-year effort. This is a 10-year journey to do this across the government.
Is it unfair, do you think, to characterize it as a 3-year journey?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, see, there's some short-term things that people like at DHS and NASA and other places are already starting to do without spending millions and millions of dollars. And every one of those agencies can start doing these things to save money. But, you know, this is not like closing a center is 1 year or 2 years. This is a long period of time to close this stuff.
Does the Obama administration get that?
You know, in talking to many people across the agencies, they would like to build the plan and show the potential savings. And those are the right things to do. But when it gets to the implementation, everybody is pretty impatient. They would like to see the savings tomorrow. The fact is that they really haven't invested in doing this, and they don't have all of the right skilled people in each of these agencies to do this. In fact, one of the things I would say to each of the CIOs who are having to do this is you really need to bring in some mentors who've done this before somewhere, you know, to help you do this. You don't need a learning curve in all this. And a lot of the guidelines that have been created by OMB are good guidelines and everything, but it is different center by center, site by site, agency by agency. How are you going to deal with the people? How are you going to deal with the extra equipment? You know, this is a big task.
You don't happen to know of anybody that would fit that role as a mentor, do you?
Absolutely. You know,
I wonder who they would call.
Absolutely could do all
that. Send those letters and postcards to Bob. I don't care.
If you guys are pimping for me for work, it's no big deal.
No.
Do I have to pay you, though?
No, of course not. This is a journalistic enterprise.
But I think that, you know, beyond the roadmap and the plan itself, you have to have experienced people leading it, but there's really one key that I found that everyone as CIOs need to implement, and it's called measurements and metrics. It's what I call a CIO scorecard. Because, you see, if you don't have all of the assets characterized and managed, and you're not managing your services, you can't take out your costs and show where the savings are in this in a easy-to-do method. Besides that, there's a lot of turnover in people and resources, and you need to be able to measure what is the progress of all this. So I would tell every CIO, you can be successful in doing this if you get the right people, you've got the right plan, and you measure and manage it through metrics.
How will they know what measurements and metrics to put in place, though? I mean, is it self-evident?
Some of it is. Some is clearly not. I mean, you can actually go in and talk about you've got 1,000 servers, and you can see those being reduced to hypothetically moving the applications from 1,000 servers to 100. So you can retire, let's say, 900 of those servers. So you physically see those gone. The space is less. The air and cooling and all that is less. So you can measure that. But when it gets to where servers have multiple applications, and you may have 6,000 applications, you have no clue of when you retire a server, how many applications got reduced.
Mm-hmm. I trust you could spend the rest of the hour answering this question, but don't. For those of us who are less familiar, why does it take 10 years? Why can't it take 3 years or a year or a few months to get this done?
Well, first of all, most of the federal agencies don't have asset management, so they don't really know what is in their facilities or hanging off their wire. And in fact, what's even worse is if you don't have asset management and know who's tapped onto your wire, your security it also is affected. So the first thing they have to do is go figure out what assets and the as-is of what they have today. That usually takes, months to do that. And in fact, it actually took them from the earlier part of this year till September to pull all that stuff together for their high-level plan. That's not even the detail side of it. So that's one thing. Secondly, it's just like having three houses. You decide you're going to downsize and move to one. How long does it take to physically move the stuff and choose which ones you're going to keep and move into that third house? And by the way, maybe that third house isn't the house you want to stay with. Maybe you're going to have to get a fourth house and then jettison all three houses.
So it's just an immense logistical enterprise, I would imagine.
Well, a lot of people are saying, well, we have to have this virtualization and all this new technology to do this, but you can just take the poor man's IT consolidation. Just consolidate. Go just take an inventory of what you've got and start consolidating. If you've got small, like closet satellite sites, close them immediately. If you have a small data center, close those immediately. And as you close each of those, you have less contractors, less contracts, less employees at those sites. Maybe you're not renting or paying for taxes, et cetera.
Well, and how much money is there in this for outside companies? I mean, it's pretty lucrative, right?
Yeah, in fact, if you add all this up, this is billions and billions to be saved. In fact, if you think about this over the whole federal landscape, there's about 2,000 data centers and remote sites. You only need about 300 to 400 to run the whole Intel, DOD, and then the rest of government.
Mm-hmm. This story says that to get around what you're talking about the money, Angie Petty of Input says that agencies are using technology refresh cycles to get around the lack of specific funding for consolidation. So there is some methodology out there that's been proven to work, as you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Bob Otto's story number two on the Federal News Countdown this week is from GCN. The headline is How to Save Energy and Money Through Data Center Consolidation. And you can find that linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Story number two from Ed O'Keefe is up next on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
NBC News Radio, I'm Luke Russert. The nation's national security director has resigned. President Obama made the announcement from the Rose Garden, saying the American people owe General James Jones a debt of gratitude for a lifetime of service.
You complete this assignment knowing that your country is safer and stronger. I thank you, and the American people thank you.
The current number two at the National Security Council moves into the top spot. Tom Donilon is known for bringing an understanding of domestic policy and politics to the job. The Labor Department reported the September unemployment numbers this morning, and the overall rate held steady at 9.6%, but CNBC's Maria Bartiromo says there was a net loss of 95,000 jobs.
People were expecting actually a flat showing in terms of new jobs created, and the fact that we actually saw a decline in jobs created is definitely worse than expected.
And it could be the birth of a trend. A new report says internet life begins before birth for about one-third of U.S. kids whose ultrasound pictures are posted online. I'm Luke Russert, NBC News Radio.
I'm high above a Walmart supercenter where it appears something huge is going on. There's a whole lot of excitement. It looks like a real free-for-all down there.
Jen, it is a free-for-all down here, literally. The Sierra Mist Natural free-for-all. They're giving away over 10 million free cans of new Sierra Mist Natural with real sugar and nothing artificial.
Don't miss the Sierra Mist Natural free-for-all this Saturday, October 9th from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Walmart supercenters. Get a free can plus a great value on 2 liters while supplies last.
One for you, one for me, two for you, two for me.
Kids can be surprisingly generous, especially in doling out germs. But when your kids go back to school, you can help curb some of that germy generosity. Join us in donating Clorox disinfecting wipes to your child's classroom. They kill the germs on hard surfaces your kids touch every day. Wherever your kids play, use Clorox generously. Clorox. Kill the germs, not the fun. Ask school before donating. Parental delivery only. Use as directed.
HalfPriceDC.com, half-price gift certificates to the area's best restaurants, spas, and more.
This week, buy half-price gift certificates to Bale Vietnamese Food and Deli in Rockville. Delicious food and great customer service at affordable prices.
Sur La Place in the Palisades area of D.C. This Belgian fine dining gem boasts over 20 types of mussels and a unique beverage list. And McLoone's Pier House, National Harbor's newest waterfront dining destination.
See all the offers at halfpricedc.com.
The Intelligence and National Security Report is brought to you by Mantech International Corporation.
Mantech has been providing IT services and solutions to the Air Force for more than 25 years, and they intend to deliver innovative and worldwide support to the upcoming NetSense 2 contract. They provide a full spectrum of net-centric services, including service-oriented architecture enterprise solutions, web service development, cybersecurity, network operations, and sustainment support. Mantech has been named one of the top 100 IT companies in the world by Business Week magazine.
Due to the high demand for Mantech's skills and expertise, they have tremendous career opportunities for cleared, highly skilled IT professionals, security experts, intelligence analysts, engineers, and technicians. Apply for openings today at Mantech.com. That's Mantech.com. Mantech, leading the convergence of national security and technology.
Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
Nancy Sutley is the chairwoman of the White House Council on Environmental Quality. She tells Jason Miller how the guidance will help agencies.
The news we made today was releasing our greenhouse gas reporting guidance. We need to know what we're doing now and to show improvement. We thought it made sense to do it government-wide, and obviously agencies will apply it, and their first report is due in January, so hopefully this gives them enough time to get everything set.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. And my guest this week, Bob Otto of Agilex and Ed O'Keefe, the Federal Eye and the Washington Post, and all the stories that we count down on the show this week are posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Ed O'Keefe, your story number two is from GovExec. The headline, Administration Defends Handling of Oil Spill. And this has turned into somewhat of a spill for the White House and for the Office of Management and Budget. And people are just surprised that OMB is involved in an oil spill in the first place.
It was actually quite interesting. The news went out, what was it, Wednesday, I guess, about these reports.
Yeah.
And I overheard a colleague sitting behind me somewhere go, what the heck does OMB have to do with the oil spill?
Yeah.
And it's a great reminder to folks who follow government management and the way things really work in Washington that OMB is the clearinghouse for just about everything.
Yeah.
Everything sensitive, any big release of government information, any big policy change, any interagency agreement has to go through OMB no matter who the president is. And in this case, it was NOAA who had various estimates on how much oil was coming out and what it was doing to impact the shorelines. And OMB's looked at the draft and said, guys, this isn't what we asked for. You have to go back and fix it. Now, that leads many people who aren't as familiar with how OMB works to think, oh, that's the administration trying to fudge the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's OMB doing its job that it's done through any administration, which is you get things, you look at it, you say, you got to go fix this, and then we'll release it.
Well, a lot of people forget the M in OMB is management.
That's what it is more than anything. And I'm the guy at the Post who covers the M in OMB.
Yeah.
We've got other people who worry about the B. So when I saw that, I said, I know exactly what that is.
Yeah.
That's an M situation at OMB.
The Presidential Commission on the Gulf of Mexico oil spill and offshore drilling released this report about how the spill was handled. The report, according to GovExec, criticizes the federal government for creating the impression that it either was not fully competent to handle the spill or not fully candid with the American people about the scope of the problem. Bob, that's about as heavy as an indictment as you can get.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, when you have these estimates, do you tell the public the best case or the worst case scenario, or do you tell them both? And because when you tell them the best case, and then months later when the actual data comes out, which may be a surprise to you as well, then the public starts to think, well, maybe you hid it from me, or maybe I don't trust you now because maybe you weren't visible about this.
This is one of those darned if you do, darned if you don't situations. And I think I do think that from the start, the White House, the administration understood we're going to get hit on this. Let's just take our lumps and plow on.
Yeah.
What I did find questionable about this week, and I think this is more a knock at journalism than it is at the administration, is we didn't play this up nearly as big as we could have. And the thought crossed my mind that had this been a report about the Bush administration, there could have been riots in the streets in some corners.
Might have been on
and for
day
some
one.
Reason, yeah, and for some reason, this one didn't catch as much fire. And maybe that's because, A, the country's sick of it. B, the country's already said in polling that the administration didn't do it. Why do we need a report to remind us? We watched it happen for 5 months.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it's another example of where this administration's having an issue of governing.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't easy. And I think for those of us who are closer to this, who follow this kind of stuff, it's to be expected.
This, Robert Gibbs made a good point, though. If you go along with the idea that, the 75% statement that Carol Browner, made was a simple misstatement, he said, Robert Gibbs acknowledged that Carol Browner misspoke, but the White House clarified Browner's remarks during a White House briefing after the interview. At that point, White House officials said about 50% of the oil was completely gone. The 75% number was a number that she gave on TV the beginning of August, that 75% of the oil that had been spilled was gone. was gone. Gibbs points out that she'd done hundreds of hours of interviews, and if she misspoke once, that's a pretty good track record. I mean, it sounds kind of...
No, it's not.
It sounds... Well, but is it or isn't? I mean, at what point do we expect the people that get put in front of television cameras to be absolutely perfect?
That's the thing.
I mean,
it's eye of the beholder, I think, because you're right. If you do hundreds of interviews and you get one little mistake, it's going to get caught. You're working for the President of the United States. You're in these high-stakes environments. People are going to root out these problems. So, yes, if it was her only mistake, it was her only mistake. But mistakes get noticed.
And I'm not downplaying the severity of the mistake, Bob.
Right.
It's still a big mistake.
People can come down on either side of that issue. You're right.
But as a government manager, I was put into many situations and, you know, I said things I probably wished I hadn't said. You know, so you can make mistakes here. We're human.
Yeah. As somebody who's in front of a microphone for a couple hours a day, I'm aware of the fact.
You've already made four.
Thanks for, you're marking big strokes in red pen on your pad over there. Ed O'Keefe's story number two on the Federal News Countdown is from GovExec. The headline is Administration Defends Handling of Oil Spill. It's linked up just like all of our Federal News Countdown stories at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We're up now to the number one stories of the week from Ed O'Keefe. Keith and Bob Otto of Agilex. We'll get to the number ones when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The National Defense Business Institute at the University of Tennessee College of Business Administration is the only major university-based research enterprise devoted to improving the way weapons systems and services are acquired. NDBI's focus is to help the government and defense industry provide the nation's warfighters with weapons systems and services that are on cost, on schedule, and perform as expected. Solid research, prompt, practical solutions, and success-based management principles. NDBI, good government and value for taxpayers.
Attention AFGE members, did you know you have free access to all federal government job listings at your fingertips? Through AFGE's partnership with AVIEW Technologies, you can view all available jobs, apply online, and be notified when a position of interest to you becomes available. View your application progress online 24/7. You'll even get information to make you a better job applicant. Simplify your next career move with AVIEW Technologies. Log on today and check out current job openings at avuecentral.com. That's avuecentral.com. Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Babies will do everything they can to keep you from sleeping. And they'll do this for well over a year. They'll throw up on your sweater, in your hair, and all over your car. They'll not only poop in their pants, they'll poop on your pants. They'll pull your hair and quite literally bite the hand that feeds them. They will talk nonstop between the ages of 6 and 9, but they won't say a single word to you once they turn 13. And when they do, it'll likely involve disagreeing at rather high volumes. Still, you will love them like nothing else, and you will do anything and everything you can to keep them happy and healthy, and so will we. At Kaiser Permanente, we offer families the tools they need to grow up and grow old together, from prenatal care to postnatal care to pediatric care and beyond. Because although there's nothing that makes us crazier than our kids, there's nothing that makes us happier either. Kaiser Permanente, may your family live long and thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Companies win federal contracts every day. Your business should be one of them. Get the latest on the top federal contracting opportunities for 2011 at Input's FedFocus event. FedFocus is the government contracting community's premier event that showcases the outlook for defense and civilian markets, data center consolidation trends, and more. Join Input on November 4th at the Fairview Park Marriott in Falls Church, Virginia, and lead your business to success. Register at FedFocus2011.input.com or call Input Events at 703-707-3698.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. What we do every week is we get two people who are very well versed in the ways of the federal government and in how the federal government does business. They choose the news stories from the week that they think are the three most important. They rank them in order from number three up to number one, and we count them down Friday afternoons at 2 on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This week's experts are Ed O'Keefe, the Federal Eye of the Washington Post, and Bob Otto of Agilex, former Chief Information Officer and Chief Technology Officer of the U.S. Postal Service. And we're up two on the countdown.
Number one!
The most important federal news story of the week. What? The singer standing in the corner. They really work cheap, which is my favorite part. It helps keep me on budget. Ed O'Keefe, your story number one this week is Kaufman warns of federal workers' pent-up demand to retire. A conversation with Senator Ted Kaufman, who is right now, I think, the most interesting senator. Replaced Senator Biden when he was selected by President Obama to go on the ticket and become vice president. Senator Kaufman was a member of Senator Biden's staff. Was he chief of staff?
He was for a while. So
he has been on Capitol Hill for many, many years.
Served on the Broadcasting Board of Governors, taught at Duke Law School, but basically spent 24 years total on Capitol Hill, he says. It'll all end in mid-November. Because Delaware is one of three states whose new senators have to start right away.
Mm-hmm.
So either Chris Coons or Christine O'Donnell will replace Ted Kaufman. Roland Burris will have to leave for Illinois. And the guy filling Robert Byrd's chair will have to go as well once the winners pick there.
And that's why I think this is fascinating, because Senator Kaufman is kind of caught up in that whole furor that's going on in Delaware. Sidebar quickly. I was in Delaware a couple weeks ago on a quick weekend outing and talked to some people there in the news business. And they're paying less attention, I think, to it in the state of Delaware than people are here in Washington and people who follow politics nationally.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to be that big a deal to them.
No.
They have a pretty good idea of the way they think the election's going to break down, it's just not it's certainly a story, but it's not nearly as big a deal to them as it is to us. Senator Kaufman, while he's been in office, has made it a point every Friday to go to the floor of the Senate and make a speech about a particular federal employee. And the Post conversation with him, which I think is really interesting and linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, is talking about the concern that Senator Kaufman has about what potentially could be a huge wave of retirement.
Yeah, and it's actually, we should point out that Senator Mark Warner has said he will continue that tradition of talking up a rank and file federal employee every week when the Senate's in session. His office confirmed that he's going to take that on because he thinks that's a good idea. And frankly, since you know, more than half of Northern Virginia has something to do with the federal government, probably a good idea for the state senator to be talking about a big constituency.
That's
but anyway,
right.
Kaufman, you know, he's been involved with TARP, with financial regulatory reform, but he has made this sort of one of his top four issues. And as a guy who has been in public service, I think he has a real neat perspective on it. And he made it clear that, remember, right as the Bush administration was ending and the Obama administration was ramping up, everyone assumed that about 10,000 people were getting ready to pack their bags and retire and head to Boca.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't happen because of the economic downturn and, you know, for understandable reasons, people didn't retire. He's making the point, he made the point to me, that at some point you have this pent-up demand to retire now.
Mm-hmm.
That at some point when things turn around and people feel comfortable enough to do it, they're going to leave. And you could see, instead of 10,000, 40,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, I said, is the government ready to replace 40,000 people if they all go in 6 months? He says, not at all. And it's time to have a very serious conversation about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only are you losing 40,000 people, you're losing the brain trust of all of these agencies. Because these are the people who've been there 10 to 20, 30 years.
The Bob Ottos of the world.
Exactly. Who know where to not only turn the lights on, but and know how they did it 5, 10 years ago and the mistakes that they shouldn't make in the future. So he suggested, and this is what was kind of disappointing, I think, is I said, so how do you fix it? Well, you have to have a big high-level meeting at the White House.
Mm.
Have one of those blue ribbon commissions.
Another
some
one.
Ideas. I said, I didn't say it at the time, but I thought, really? That's his answer to this? He said, you got to bring the best people in together in a room and do that. I was like, well, we seem to do that on every other issue, and don't necessarily seem to do a good job with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the administration hopes that these hiring reforms that are supposed to start within the next few weeks is one of the answers, but even the hiring experts will tell you it's going to take years to get those reforms in place. And I think there is a potential in some places, and it's not necessarily the big ones. It's not necessarily the Pentagon or Homeland Security or Veterans Affairs. It's going to be the regulatory agencies and a lot of those other domestic departments, where you could see a lot of people leave and suddenly nobody know what to do.
You will. I was a federal employee for over 38 years, and I worked across government agencies, and I still keep in contact with a lot of agencies and people. And they are, if the economy does loosen up and get better, they're going to leave. Many of them stayed the extra year or two to, because their 401k got hit or whatever it may have been. But, you know, I sort of break this down into a couple, areas. First of all, we know the problem, all right? And we talk about, we're not prepared. We should talk about how do you get prepared. And I sort of broke this into four areas. One is we need the staff. The hard-to-place jobs, you know, the jobs that you talked about, the science, the technology, the engineering, and the math disciplines, we need to find a way to do that. We need to address the knowledge drain, the potential loss of the institutional knowledge you just talked about. You know, it takes 6 months or more to hire somebody, so we got to address this. How long does it take to hire a new employee? And then the last piece is, how do you attract the best and brightest to government when you're sitting there talking about the infrastructure in government isn't up to date, the work rules and teleworking and stuff is just starting to come into play? They want the challenges. They're not really that much into the job security. They want the ability to get feedback, work with good people, and make a difference. And so in some government agencies, that's not it.
Mm-hmm.
I have been surprised a little bit and quite honestly a little disappointed from time to time at how the administration has approached, in particular, the status of the IT situation at agencies. Vivek Kundra goes out regularly and says the government's IT is technologically is way behind the private sector. And almost talking down situations that the government finds itself in. And how is that then going to be appealing to somebody who's getting out of college and thinking, well, here's the guy who leads it, and he's saying I'm not going to be able, essentially, paraphrasing, I'm not going to be able to use cutting-edge technology in my job here, so I'll go to work for Agilex or the Washington Post or something.
Well, you don't want to come and do that because we're still running printing presses that don't work well.
Well, you do want to do that at Agilex. We have great technology.
That is an issue, but I'll tell you, every time they say that, I then hear from people in the private sector who will say, hold on, it's just as bad here as it is with the government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not all up to speed and we're not all up to, you know, ahead of the government necessarily.
Right.
This isn't just a private versus public thing. Everyone has this problem. But you're right. They're out there scoring political points. I think this is an administration that could very effectively tackle a lot of these issues, but with, you know, federal employment and pay and benefits being in the crosshairs and being a perennial campaign issue, it's very difficult to talk about these things. And, you know, not until some crisis where the brain drain is evident, I think, is there going to be serious discussion about this.
But to your point, this can be fixed.
Oh, absolutely, okay. It could be fixed. But who's going to take the political capital to get it done and the time and make it their pet cause? Kaufman was a special case because he was a guy who knew he didn't have to run.
He had nothing to lose.
And he had some expertise. Now, a Mark Warner or a Ben Cardin, who, you know, have states that have a lot of these people living in them, might be able to take it on and score some home state points, but how are they going to convince the other, you know, 99 members that that's something they got to worry about?
But it's always sad that we have to sort of have a crisis before we can change something, because we've seen it coming and we know it's coming. We can prevent this.
But how long, too, have we been talking about the fact that eventually there's going to be this retirement tsunami? Mike Causey's been writing about it for probably 20 years, and to the point where now a lot of his columns about it are kind of around 180 degrees, saying, wait a minute, this is never, we've been talking about it, and it's never happened yet.
But, you know, 10 years ago when we were writing about it, I'm not sure that the demographics and the total number of people was really at a critical mass. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, if you think of over that period of time, we've gotten there now.
Oh,
we're,
okay.
We're to that generation where they're ready to now leave.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't be much longer here.
And Senator Kaufman does mention in your conversation with him that it's not a case of people retiring from government and going to work someplace else. It's people who are, as you say, Bob, old enough to just
stop
working, period, and be ready for that part of their lives. Ed O'Keefe's conversation with Senator Kaufman under the headline, Kaufman warns of federal workers' pent-up demand to retire, is story number one on the Federal News Countdown this week, according to him. And it's posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Bob Otto's story number one is next. To wrap up today's Federal News Countdown, that's next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Mortgages should be illegal because you're getting robbed every month. For example, if you have a typical $200,000 30-year mortgage, you're going to end up paying over $400,000 after interest. That's almost a quarter of $1 million that you could be putting into your pocket instead of the bank's. I want to send you a powerful free CD to show you how. Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. My proven system can eliminate your mortgage and all your other debts using just the money you already make. That's right, no credit card debt, no car payment, no mortgage. It's easy, it works.
I will be able to pay off my house in approximately 2.5 years on a 30-year mortgage.
Stop getting robbed of your money and your future. Call now and I'll rush you a free CD today. Call 1-800-500-2884. For your free CD, call 1-800-500-2884. 1-800-500-2884.
It's time to get real. Only one of the aerial refueling tankers offered to the U.S. Air Force is flying now and ready for our troops today. It's EADS North America's KC-45. America's warfighters deserve a proven, more capable aircraft that's performing now. And the EADS North America KC-45 will be made in the U.S. by 48,000 Americans. They're ready to get to work, and the Air Force is ready for a real tanker. See it at kc45now.com.
Paid for by EADS North America.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight for October is the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Nearly 1 million Americans are living with a form of blood cancer, and over 53,000 people will lose their battle to leukemia, lymphoma, myeloma, or Hodgkin's disease this year. Join the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society in the fight against blood cancers by participating in the upcoming Light the Night Walks. With your help, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society will continue to improve the quality of life for patients and their families. For more information, visit federalnewsradio.com.
Back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the Federal News Countdown this week with Ed O'Keefe of the Washington Post and Bob Otto of AgileX. And Bob Otto, your story number one of the week is the NextGov story with the headline, GAO says Defense Finance Systems $6.9 billion over budget and years behind schedule. And this is coverage of a hearing of the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Subcommittee on Federal Financial Management. I covered some highlights of this hearing earlier in the week, and Senator McCain, I think, said it most incisively, similar message to what members on both sides of the aisle had to say at this hearing. Senator McCain is quoted in this story saying, if this were a corporation in America, the shareholders would have fired management a long time ago. And it's really hard to argue. Asif Khan, Director of Financial Management and Assurance at GAO, said that only one of 10 enterprise resource planning systems in the business transformation operations at DOD has been completed long after they should have been done. And as the headline says, almost $7 billion over budget. Why is this so hard, financial management in particular, so hard for the agencies to wrap their arms around?
I think many of the federal agencies don't map their existing processes to the packages that they buy, the ERP packages. And what ends up happening is that they end up tailoring a lot of the software and the functionality and the solution itself to where it just takes forever. I mean, this GAO report isn't pretty. I mean, it basically points out almost everything that was wrong. But what really caught my eye in all this was that OMB had made some recommendations about financial management systems. And I believe that if the DOD actually takes some of these recommendations and implements them, that they can get this back on track. But this has been off track for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really out of kilter. We're not talking about a few million or a few months. I mean, this is a lot of money stuff.
And this is not the only agency, though, where this is happening. If you take the high-risk list and you go down and search on the terms financial management,
you find a few, don't you? It's all over them. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's kind of interesting, though, that ERP systems are really tough to implement. And a lot of companies in this industry now are thinking about whether they should actually implement that for their companies or just go in and build spot solutions now. And so there's a real question about implementation of that. But one of the things I would probably say in all this is I've gotten knowledgeable about a new methodology. It's called Agile,
mm-hmm.
where you actually define requirements and create software releases in weeks rather than months and years. And really, I believe what they need to do is come in and put this under an agile management where the project doesn't get off of track.
Mm-hmm.
And this also requires then that the people who are knowledgeable about the business processes are also involved in all the project management and decision making. And then they are part of it, the decision and points and all this. And you're not going to see this get off the off the radar screen then, because it's really visible.
Mm-hmm. I am fascinated by this because, as I said, so many of these on the high-risk list, and they seem to be the ones also that get on there and stay on there and stay on there and stay on there.
Because it's such a complex issue
yeah.
that I think is just so difficult for folks not in the know to understand. And you know, it's easy for McCain to show up and give that quote, but heck, he probably gives that quote at least once a week at some kind of, committee hearing of some sort.
Well, but not really necessarily inaccurately.
Well, no, but does he really understand it, and are they really going to be able to keep the political pressure on the Defense Department to do this? At the same time, you wonder, do you have to give the Defense Department a bit of a pass because they've been otherwise preoccupied the last few years?
Well, that's a fair point.
Well, but to your point, too, the finances of the Defense Department and a couple of the large federal agencies is very complex.
Right.
This is not like you're balancing your checkbook here.
Exactly.
So, yes.
Do you think spot solutions make more sense for an agency like this because of that?
I think that what happens is if you're not willing to change the processes of a large organization like this to meet the needs of what's off-the-shelf software, then I would say yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, adding that into the mix then, where would you go there?
I would go in and I would break up this project into smaller functionality that they need, and I would manage those each individually.
But then, okay, take it out one more layer then, what happens when you try to go and combine all of those? Another element that's been really challenging for agencies trying to make these systems talk to each other on the back end when they need to do that.
Actually, believe it or not, many of those architectures, and I would believe that they would have this, conceptually can put this together, but also then at a more detail level can put this together. So it's not that complex that it couldn't be done,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not trying to simplify this. This is big.
Mm-hmm. Bob Otto's story number one on the Federal News Countdown this week from NextGov. GAO says defense finance system $6.9 billion over budget, years behind schedule. You can find it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And that puts the wraps on another Federal News Countdown. Ed O'Keefe of the Washington Post, the Federal Eye, thank you very much for being here
today. Wonderful to be here again.
As always, great to have you. And also great to have you, Bob Otto of AgileX.
You know, I always love being here, and I had the presence of being with Ed today.
Lucky yeah. you. And lucky me, and lucky you, listener.
Your hazard pay checks are in the mail.
And thank you for being here on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Dora Beck Insider up next between 3 and 7, and a brand new In-Depth with Francis Rose Monday at 1 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.